Alrighty. Hey, gang. Welcome back, you guys. Episode 130 of Zero Carb Journal. I'm Matt, as always, and how are you guys? You have a good week? A good couple weeks? I did. I've been having a great early summer run here, and I sure hope you guys are as well. So, how are you? I hope this is working. I'm still working on my streaming. It looks like it is. I got good indicators here. It says my stream is bad, but I think that's just because I'm using low bitrate. But, yeah. How are you guys? Doing good, I hope? Enjoying the beginning of your summer? Unless you're in the Southern Hemisphere? Robin! Hey! You made it. You caught us. All right. Kuhner, great to see ya. All right. Got a great crowd here this morning. Not many, but high quality. So, glad to see you guys. So I took a week off from doing my journal for the first time in since I've started, really. I mean, I guess I missed a few when I was traveling or whatever, but I just took a little bigger break. It felt great, you guys, honestly. I'm gonna stick to this sort of bigger gaps between journals because I do feel a little better coming back to you guys with a little bit more time. So I'll probably start developing some other videos and do a journal entry at least once a month. So, yeah, Robin, glad you're here. Glad you got to catch it live. Sorry for my early schedule. I got that old man can't sleep thing where I get up at 4 a.m. and just want to get everything on my list done. So, it's hard for me to wait till this time, to be honest with you. I sort of just, like, go mow my lawn and vacuum and try and keep myself occupied so I don't wander off and disappear and forget about what I was supposed to do before I get into the rest of the day. So Robin's on my time, Kuhner, I'm pretty sure. Robin, well, I mean, conceptually, we're in the same time zone. I think we're on vastly different schedules, though. I wish I could sleep in, Robin. I envy you your, I guess I don't know your situation, so I won't say that, but I would like to be able to sleep in myself, but I can't. So I've had a great couple weeks, you guys. I hope you guys have too. I've been just continuing my quarantine. Yeah, that's what I thought. I figured you were a night owl, Robin. So I've just been continuing my quarantine and, it's been awesome. I've been just staying put, focusing on being in the moment and being positive and being content, really, because I keep thinking about stuff I'd like to be doing. You know, these thoughts keep creeping into my mind about what I would be doing if there wasn't quarantine. I'm like, oh, I should load up my van, take my dirt bike, and go camping, you know, a few hours from home here. Or I should load up my surfboards and go out to the beach. And then I think about it, and I'm like, if you want to ride your dirt bike and camp, you live right where you can do it. I can just jump on my bike and go hit the forest roads and I can sleep outside and I can light a fire. And the only thing I really want to do is drive my van around, and it's just wasting money and not time, at least in my state. I'm trying to do my best to not, you know, travel around and spread things out, but it's been great actually. So it's not that I'm so worried about what I am doing or not doing, but more actually it's just, forced me to stay in the moment, stay present, and realize that I really don't have anything that I need to go do, and that nothing I go do is really going to change much of my situation, and that I've got everything I need. I'm pretty happy. And so life's pretty good. So it's been a good push for me here. I've been really focused on pushing my projects forward. I've been working hard on my stove stuff. The cows, we are 1 week away from cow slaughter day, so that's a big deal. That's kind of a big project, just in the sense, it won't be that much work for me, but it's a big project in the sense of putting my food in the freezer for the year. You know, it just feels like I got a big check on my list checked off. And firewood is my other big one that I'm just kind of like saying, well, I'll just stay home and work on firewood. And so I have been focused on that, but we had a pretty rainy last almost 2 weeks. So for this last week, I've been pretty much stuck inside. Today is the first day it's not pouring rain. We got like half an inch yesterday. It just poured. Kuhner, love to have a van. I know. So I think I've told this story probably a million times, but you know, when I was younger, I had Volkswagen camper Westfalias and pickups with campers on them and full of surfboards and guitars and snowboards and Malamutes. And I lived on the road, pretty much for a long, I mean, like 15 years, I slept 300 nights away from home. you know, just doing action sports stuff, and it was part of my job as well. And so, yeah, I really wanted to get back into a van, and that opportunity came up. And so, yeah, I've made it happen, and I haven't used it. You know, I talked about it a lot this winter, how I was frustrated that I wasn't using it because I was working so much, and I still haven't used it. And now I'm just kind of settling into the idea that I have it, I've built it up, and the time's going to come when it's right. So I'm almost there. I mean, I've got my mobile internet. My biggest concern right now really is finances, to be totally honest. I don't have any work, you know, and I don't know if I'm going to have any for a while. My boat work, you know, is pretty much dried up completely with quarantine. And so I'm reluctant. My van really sucks gas. So I'm reluctant to just go, you know, drive $500 worth of gas out of my bank account just to go hang out in some woods a few hours away when I'm hanging out in the woods here. So, but yeah, I conceptually, Kuhner, that van's going to be my ticket out of here next fall. Hopefully if I can get some money saved up, if I can, you know, fix what I've got going on here with this quarantine situation financially, then I am set up to do all my work and stuff from the road, so I conceptually could go out on the road and stay out on the road. So, and Robin, yeah, torn between travel feet and not wanting to go out much and catch anything. That's exactly where I am too. I'm itching to travel. You know, I canceled my trip to El Salvador. I've got all that plane fare still set up that I can use. And I'm itching to travel, but at the same time, I'm appreciating this time to be present in here in the moment and just sort of appreciating that, this, you know, just, you know, basically trying to treat this as vacation, as traveling, looking at it with that same positive attitude. So anyways, that's kind of what I've been doing, which is to say not much, but a lot at the same time. So, hey, Linda. Hi, Fran. Nice to see you. Syracuse, New York. All right. So that's what I've been doing. I've been mostly just staying home, staying positive, focusing on my, you know, financial independence at home, because that's going to be more important. So working on my videos and working on my stove and stuff like that. Just like that, Kuhner. Kuhner says, I'm trying to learn to program since there's so much work in that field and it's suitable for remote working. Got to see if you like it, though. And yeah, that's just it, Kuhner. That's what I've been doing. I've been focusing on really progressing and moving forward in my personal endeavors, and hopefully things that lead to, you know, a way to be financially sustainable here at home. So we'll see. So far, so good. I'm trying to broaden my horizons as well. I've been learning some coding and some ways to take care of the little money I do have better and things like that. So, yeah, Robin. So I live, you, Robin says you live in a place that looks like where We City folks go for vacations. And that's exactly it. I mean, I moved here because this is where I always came to vacation when I lived in the city. And I always said someday I'll live there and then I'll figure out how to make a living. So I'm still trying to figure out how to make a living, but I live here where I want to be. And that was it. I just was frustrated with always wanting to be somewhere where I wasn't. So I did. I moved here. It's where I would always vacation. And that's what I'm telling myself when I'm about ready to, you know, when I'm getting frustrated that I'm not out on my, in my van on the road. I'm like, you live where you want to go. So, and it's true. I do. And I did. I went surfing the day before yesterday, right at the bottom of my hill, Kuhner. I know that'll hit you, because I know you've been wanting to go to your rock gym, and I hadn't been. That's the first time I've surfed since quarantine started in February or whatever. So, holy cow, was I out of shape. I did terribly. But it felt really good to go. We finally got some surf. It finally was kind of a calm day. I didn't feel like the people were going to be, you know, my beach has been the only beach open for 100 miles, so everyone's been there. So I thought it'd be calm, and sure enough, I went down there. There's not one soul there, and I had a great time. So, so yeah, all good staying home. So let's talk about food. How are you guys doing, Zero Carbon? Any new additions or retractions from your diet? Anything new that you've learned? I've had a good couple weeks. Oh, you did go climbing. That's awesome, Kuhner. Sweet. You've been climbing for the first time. That's great. Yeah, so you probably felt like I did, huh? You feel like you get to start over from a few stages back and make all your progress again. So I'm not too upset about that. I am going to say that, and I don't really talk about feeling my age. I do complain sometimes about being 50, but I am going to say that that surf, after not having surfed for like 5 months or whatever it's been, I felt not just out of shape. I just felt like, whoa, I'm tired. So I got to get my cardio going again. I've been doing my workouts like we talked about in the past, my weighted pull-ups and stuff like that. And I'm actually really strong right now, but I just don't have much endurance. So, and I felt my age in terms of my endurance. Not like, I mean, I felt like I functioned fine, but I didn't have much gas. A little frustrating. So, but anyways, back to food. So I've had a great couple weeks, you guys. I've been just mostly sticking to my ground beef. Ate a little bit of ribeye, baconized the way I like it, thin and fried. And I also tried some brisket, cooked that same way, and I really liked it. Robin says, I decided to cut out your 100% cacao. I'm not really sure how we say that. I always chocolate that I thought was your little indulgence, and you feel better without it. Yeah, Robin, that's interesting and sad and hopeful all at the same time. So that's one of the ones that I, for the first, and not even so much when I was zero carb, but more when I was specific carbohydrate diet, when I was first learning about how sick I was and trying to chase my diet, I felt like really dark chocolate was okay for me. You know, that would be my one little treat, my one little square. And I don't remember how long I did it for, but as time went on, I kind of started to take it out and put it back in. I had to admit that it was doing something to me that I didn't like. And it's subtle, as a lot of these things are. But when you take them out, you find that, yeah, that they're doing something. So yeah, the oxalates I know can be pretty heavy in those, especially the real bitter raw cacao bars. Oh, Josh, you made it. All right. Great to see you, man. I told you GMT minus 8, and I just found out this morning it's GMT minus 7. I think that's because of daylight savings time or something. But anyways, I'm glad you're here, man. Thanks for showing up. So yeah, Robin, I know it's funny, isn't it? I mean, cacao, really dark chocolate, I always thought, no big deal, I can have a little bit. But even that little bit, once you get really strict and clean, you'll notice that it takes you backwards, at least in my case. So it's interesting for me to hear that you are having the same experience. And you're probably like me in that you'll go back and forth with accepting that and then putting it aside for a while. So for me, it's eggs, you know, like they're fine. I'm eating them right now and I'm fine. But a couple weeks of eating eggs every day and I definitely have a lot more gas. And I'll find myself using the toilet maybe twice a day or maybe having to get up at night to use the toilet, which is unusual these days for me. And so I know that the eggs are taking me that direction. So then I'll stop for a month or two and I'll feel significantly better without them. And then I'll go back to them and they won't be bad enough to keep me off them for a while. So interesting the way those things play out. But it's such an important part of our journey, right, to experiment with those things. And to cut them out like I did with salt and then bring them back in and see how you feel and really just evaluate, because there's so much information out there that that sends you in all different directions. And you just have to figure it out for yourself. So Kuhner says, it's subtle for me too until I started binging. Also started wondering if 90 to 100% might be worse than 70 or 80. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. Chocolate definitely can instigate binges for me. Although I, like I said, I haven't really had much since I've started, you know, strict carnivore 3 years ago. I've been so concerned, you know, so focused on chasing my ultimate health that I haven't, you know, you guys know bacon and eggs are about as far as I stray these days. And I haven't really gotten past those boundaries without pulling back. So I keep thinking I'm going to reach out farther. As a matter of fact, the one that I always look at, you guys, I'll tell you what my biggest temptation is. And I'm not that tempted, because you guys know how it is. Once you've been carnivore for a while, you're not tempted in the same way you used to be. But the one thing that I think that I might try someday, and I walk by them all the time, is ice cream. And they may have those little tiny, I don't know how much they are. They're like single serving. And they have like I think there's Häagen-Dazs is who makes them. But they, you know, just like a vanilla ice cream, right? If you got a real clean one, it's going to be what? Cream and an egg and sugar and vanilla. And those things all seem like they're probably not going to take me too far off track. But I keep not buying it, because I know that I'm not going to get that much pleasure from it. And it's not going to do me any good. So it's interesting how that stuff is, though. So actually, another one that I'm thinking this summer, we'll see, but I have, you know, endless fruit trees and endless, I still have endless, strawberries and I can't even remember. There's so many berry varieties, raspberries and huckleberries. And I mean, I planted so many plants, it's coming up in a permaculture way, you know, without me taking care of that stuff. There's a lot of food here in the summer. So, last summer I took a few bites of plums and pears and things. They just tasted mealy and kind of dry. And I took a bite and I'd be like, ew, it's not very good after you've been carnivore for a while. So I'd spit them back out. And I'll probably continue to do that. But I do have this idea of like eating a whole pear and going for a bike ride and seeing if I get like superpower or diarrhea or, you know, what happens. So I don't know. I might have a once in a while, one of my fruits, but the funny thing is it just sounds nice. And then once I take that bite, they don't taste very good at all anymore. So interesting. So Robin says, I'm fine with dairy as long as it's only once in a while, but can't make it a staple. Have it out at a restaurant like cream and a coffee, but don't keep it in the fridge. Yeah, I think I'm probably the same, Robin, although I just had a couple scary experiences with cheese that make me unsure of how bad it could get. So, but for, you know, for when I was doing a specific carbohydrate diet, I was making my own yogurt on the daily, and I thought that made me feel better. As a matter of fact, I've considered going and getting some milk and making a batch of yogurt just to see how that is. I really enjoyed it. Sounds really weird, but some yogurt, like as kind of mixed to make your ground beef kind of saucy, it's really good. I know it sounds disgusting, but you know, you end up in some weird places following these diets. So, Kuhner used to get really good ice cream, melt a layer of dark chocolate on top of it. One of the few things I do miss sometimes when thinking back. Yeah. I mean, those were my weaknesses. And I think that's probably I think it was tied into how I was sick, was part of the strong cravings for some of those carbs. I was just, you know, I was never really terribly overweight, but man, I should have been. I was just a carb monster. I couldn't control myself, like with ice cream and dark chocolate. If I bought a gallon of ice cream, I'd eat it that same day. I'd put it back, I'd eat a few bites, and I'd put myself some on, you know, in a bowl and put it away and bury it so I wouldn't go get it, but I'd go back and get it and refill. And yeah, it was bad. So a very small portion, says Esther, that she can do the same. And, yogurt and ground beef is yummy, says Robin Stroganoff. Yeah, it is. It surprised me when I figured it out, like mixing that yogurt with like ground beef. And then, you know, when you're carnivore, you know, you do all sorts of funny carnivore stuff. So I would like have bowls of like chopped ground beef and bacon and salmon mixed up. And then you put the yogurt in there and it's just crazy good. It's really weird. And oddly enough, with the specific carbohydrate diet, the only thing that was different in that diet that was added to those ingredients was fruit. So I would do that same thing, but I would mix it with like apple. It wasn't really applesauce. It was my apples that I would boil that day and kind of mash and make like an applesauce, but it was super good. Mix the yogurt with ground beef and then fry patties. No, just eat it raw. Like the ground beef was cooked, Kuhner, and then the yogurt was like a sauce. And it sounds weird, like it wouldn't be a good sauce, but it just sort of ends up being like a savory, like a cream sauce in your mouth. It's really interesting. And it takes other flavors really well. So I know I just said fruit and that's really weird, but I guess I can't really speak to flavors on a carnivore diet because we don't really do, or I don't do any spices or flavorings. So, but yeah, even just the yogurt and ground beef, just makes a really sort of rich, you know, kind of like a cream sauce, like Robin said, like a stroganoff. It almost makes like a cream sauce. It's really good. But again, that's homemade yogurt. So that, it means that I would, ferment it for over 24 hours. So it had absolutely no lactose in it. And it was really low sugar. You basically had, you know, most commercial yogurts, they have a much shorter fermenting period. So they're about like, they still have maybe half their sugars in there and the bacteria hasn't eaten it all. But when you make it yourself for the specific carbohydrate diet, trying to, address digestive issues, you know, the goal is to get all the lactose out. So it's not as sweet. It's probably more akin to like a Greek yogurt. But yeah, really good mixed with the beef. Yeah, Robin says it just right. Fry up the beef and add yogurt right at the end as you serve it. And, or make your own creme fraiche. I don't even know how you say those words, Fran. But yeah, that exactly, and use it in place of yogurt. And tzatziki sauce is exactly, that's a really good example, Esther, because tzatziki sauce is basically yogurt, and it's obviously really common to have with meat. So once you mix them together, you're like, oh, right, I've had this before. But as Americans, we're sort of like yogurt, you know, sweet breakfast food, mix it with beef, sounds weird. But not that you're an American Cuner. My apologies. I've had European continental breakfasts as well, and so I know you guys got the yogurt right next to the little hard-boiled egg machine, and that's pretty good stuff. Oh, Robin says I use something called labneh, and it's a soft cheese made from strained kefir. Yeah, Robin, labneh. I believe it's Lebanese, maybe? That's good stuff. You live in a great place for buying great food, Robin. I'm envious. Yeah, Cuner, like tzatziki. So Josh said, heard about people with peanut allergies desensitizing themselves to them by exposing themselves to tiny amounts, gradually increasing them over time until such time as they are no longer allergic. They've successfully done it with people who have serious peanut allergies. Oh, and then so Josh is wondering about reintroducing foods if you're 100% carnivore, and then slowly reintroducing foods in minuscule amount. Has anyone tried this? It's a great question, Josh. It's a really common one. And you know what, you guys, let me introduce Josh really quickly. Josh is new here, and he is a wonderful follower of, and a great, you know, just long time, co-corresponder. We've corresponded for a while now, haven't we, Josh? And, on my other channel with stoves, and Josh has built one of my stoves. And he just emailed me about a new project for their new home. He lives on a lovely farm in Wales and raises sheep for butcher boxes that he sells to. He's a local farmer who sells sheep to locals in Wales. So he's pretty much one of us. But I made what I thought was a mistake, you guys. I do my stove chats, and someone asked me about cooking, and I ended up talking about carnivore diet, and I've tried hard not to do that on my stove channel because there's a lot of folks there who really, you know, are just real deep into the growing your own vegetarian world, and I respect that, but I know they're not going to be very receptive to this information, so I try to leave it out of there. But I spoke up, and Josh, wonderful, I was so happy. He emailed me and said, man, I'm curious. I raise sheep, you know, looking for some more information about health. And anyway, so here's Josh for the first time. So Josh, that's a great question. It's a classic noob question. There's no judgment in that statement. I'm just telling you, that's totally one of the very first things a lot of people are going to ask. And it takes a little while when you're new to this whole concept to come around to our point of view, but I will give you our point of view on that. And I'll tell you where we're at with that is that a lot of people start carnivore with the idea that they are going to be able to fix whatever's wrong with them or figure out which foods are the irritants and then work their way back to some semblance of what they consider a balanced diet or a mixed diet. And truly, there are some people that do that. I have a few friends who have done sort of various versions of that. Now, I'm not sure where to pick up from here without... But as Robin says, she says, I think it depends on the amount of damage that you've done to your body. And so I think that if we were all standing in the same place as you were and we were all having a discussion, we were all like, we haven't been there yet, but what do we think of the carnivore diet? You know, it's really a great perspective to say, you know, I'm looking at it like an elimination diet. I'm going to try this for 30 days as strict as I can, and I'm going to add some stuff back in and see how things affect me. And I think when you're at the starting line, that's a really reasonable approach. And that's pretty much where my mind was when I started. And so the idea that you're going to do that is really, I think, really productive and positive and will help you progress. The reality, however, is that once you're in this way of eating and you have progressed past kind of the first hurdles, which are really like breaking that carb grip on your internals so that you stop having cravings for them, which takes a few weeks, and changing over to being a real fat-burning metabolism entirely, so your body's no longer sort of struggling for energy and asking you for carbs and changing over your gut biome so that you don't have, you know, things in there trying to influence you to eat more carbs. And that takes weeks and maybe a month, you know, to get the things out of your gut, kill them off entirely so they're not trying to influence you to eat another Oreo or whatever. So it takes a while to kind of get to be a real carnivore, to really be past all of the hurdles that you're sort of just fighting for in those first few months. Weeks anyways, month for sure. So then once you get to that point where you're ready to start adding stuff back in and doing elimination, most people are just kind of getting comfortable at 30 days mark. So usually it's going to be like 3 months or so to really feel like, okay, I'm settling in, know how I feel as a carnivore. I'm going to try some broccoli. I'm going to try some of this or that. And I'm going to tell you right now, Josh, that most people, and I'll tell you why I believe it's true, but most people will find that they're just never going to want to go back. Or at least they're going to try things and they're going to realize, as you've probably just came, when you came into our conversation talking about a few things we try here and there, they're going to probably have a totally different perspective. I'll just give you my perspective. Like I talked about the fruit. In my mind right now, I perceive it as being like a treat, but when I actually go eat it, it doesn't taste very good. I know it makes me feel worse. I know that I'm the best physical shape I've been in my whole life right now. And I know that eating carbs is a slippery slope because you eat a little bit, it's like smoking one cigarette, you know, you eat a little bit and you're going to want some more the next day or in a few hours. You'll be able to fight that, that urge. But right now there is no urge. So why do I even want to start that wheel turning again? So for a number of reasons, and then, you know, last but not least, typically most people who haven't been eating carbs, as soon as they eat carbs again, recognize that the carbs are having an enormous impact on their well-being and that they feel terrible. You know, no, even if it's not an allergy, it's just like you'll just bloat up with all that water again and you'll be like, I feel awful. How did I not notice this before? Now, that's most people's experience. Now, I have had a few friends, mostly younger, who have tried this and gone back and forth, and they seem pretty dang metabolically flexible. Like it doesn't make or break them one way or the other. They definitely notice some differences. They see positives on both sides of it, but it doesn't seem to be such a strong, you know, choice one way or the other. And so that's why, you know, most of us, when we encourage people to try it, it's like, just try it. Don't make yourself any promises. Don't tell yourself it's for life. Don't tell yourself it's not for life, but do try and be strict for 30 days. And then, you know, evaluate how you feel about your future, what you want to do, and take it from there. So that's the top level of that. We could go real deep there. But I'm going to go back up through the comments here and we'll catch up. So Margaret says, it comes down to realizing you don't need to go back to anything. So that's wonderfully said. And that's what I was really trying to say, Josh, is that after a while you start thinking that you're going to go back to stuff, and then you kind of get through this journey and you're like, why would I go back to that? Like, why would I go back to, you know, cutting my fingers off or whatever? It just, you just kind of realize that you were mistaken, that there's no advantage to going back. That's how most of us feel, I think. And your attitude evolves to the realization of what is optimal. And Kuhner says, yes, somehow I started with the idea of an elimination diet, but then never wanted to go back. And Esther says, the taste change, and we no longer crave the old food items. This is so awesome having you guys here. Man, I can't even tell you. For me to sit here and just say this stuff is one thing, but to have you guys here and all of us you know, just affirming our experiences, God, I can't even tell you. It means so much to me, you guys. Thank you. So Esther or Fran says, for me, tiny amounts of ice cream doesn't bother me, except that it turns into larger and larger amounts. The proverbial slippery slope. That's a huge factor, Fran, for me, is that, and it's why I don't let myself start. Because why put myself through that hardship of starting and then having, you know, the bigger, it's like the start's easy and then the big job is not keeping going. And so why would I even bother for the, it's a mental treat, but when you actually taste those things, they're not good anymore. So many times you introduce these things, they're disappointing and sometimes make you feel gross. Exactly. Robin says, I had a glass of champagne at a celebration, but it tasted a lot better in my memory than it did in reality. Absolutely. I did the same thing, Robin, at Mother's Day, I think it was last year, with my family. And my father bought a bottle of champagne, and my aunt and my mom, and, you know, It was a celebration, and I raised my glass, which is all I needed to do, but I also took a sip, and I was in the bathroom literally in like 2 minutes. It just went straight through me, and it tasted awful. So I won't make that mistake again. So happy not to want any booze anymore. There's not even one moment that I do. Yeah, Cuner, me too. So yeah, Josh, Josh says it makes sense. I've done keto in the past and then tried to go for a moderate amount of carbs, but didn't take long before you were shoveling the pasta. And Josh, yeah. So that's, I think most of us here can give you affirmation there that most of us found keto to be far more difficult than carnivore. And the reason for that is that slippery slope. It's just like trying to be a cigarette smoker who smokes once every 2 days or something like that. And that's keto, in my opinion, is by limiting carbs, all you're doing is feeding your addiction, but not letting yourself be satisfied. And so it just gets harder and harder and harder. I mean, keto is wonderful, don't get me wrong, but I think carnivore is a much more naturally sustainable way of eating. You don't have to measure anything or think about things, and it doesn't become a battle with yourself. Like, I don't think any of us, for the most part, I mean, we all struggle a little bit at times, but compared to other ways of eating, there's no struggle with carnivore. You're not like, oh, I wish I could have that, but I can't. I'll just weigh this out because I only get so much. You know, you just kind of get out of all of those mindsets, and I think that's one of the real attractive parts to it. Esther says, I like this Sunday meeting with all of you. Esther, I love it. Thank you so much for being here, all you guys. So it's great. And Cuner says, I'm jealous. Red wine is my kryptonite. Oh, well, that's Fran says that. Yeah, Fran, you're not the only carnivore who feels that way. I have some other carnivore friends who feel like red wine is something they just can't give up. But at the same time, they don't feel like it's necessary for them. You know, they accept the downsides that come with it, and they don't seem to be overwhelming. So, you know, if it's something that you can enjoy and not take yourself too far backwards, more power to you. And Esther says, keto is difficult when you can't digest the vegetables. That was it for me, Esther, although it took me a while to figure it out, even because here I was on my farm growing all my own food. And of course, all the produce that we, you know, champion in this permaculture kind of world is all the produce that's the toughest to digest. It's sort of ironic because we're talking about our health and all the stuff, and then we're trying, you know, we're growing like these really hardy kales that grow, you know, all winter long and stuff like that. And you go and eat them and come to find out I enjoyed them. I mean, I loved it. I made kale chips. I ate kale chips until that was probably what got me to bleed, to be honest. I'm sorry for the details, but you know, I used to eat tons of kale chips and cabbage, and I'd have my sauerkraut, not, you know, my sauerkraut crock always going, and my sourdough bread with whole wheat that I ground myself from, that I grew myself. And all of those things were like exponentially harder to digest than what would have been the crappier version. You know, I should have been eating Wonder Bread. Probably I would have been healthier. But it's funny how that works. So, so let's see. Robin says every low carb conference has a booth from the keto wine people. I didn't know that. That's funny. Yeah. Keto cookies, keto ice cream. Yeah. I did know about that. There's a lot of, I mean, you know, that's one thing that's nice about it actually. In my opinion, is that keto framework is loose enough that it does allow people who would never, ever, 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 ever be able to do this, you know, allows them a way to at least experience some of the benefits of a low carb lifestyle, which I think, you know, as sometimes depressing as the modern world is, I am still so hopeful when I see how much progress we are making with our low carb story, getting that out there in the world. I mean, just in normal forums and message boards, I see people saying, I'm really focusing on my health. I'm going to try and, you know, cut my carb intake down. So I think we're moving forward for sure. So, and Josh says, 3 years ago, my wife and I planted 700 blueberry bushes on our farm. Josh, I mean, I totally get it. I wish, so I think I'll probably make like a clickbait video on this channel that has a clickbait title that says like homesteading on a carnivore diet or something like that. And it'll be for you, Josh. It'll be for us. But I wish that you and I could have been communicating about this stuff when I was at first going through this change, because I got to tell you, looking at a carnivore way of eating, coming from a homesteading perspective of 20 years of building my homestead out, it was terrifying. It was depressing. I thought my whole life was changed to the point where like all that stuff I had done in the past was wrecked, and, or you know what I'm saying. I just thought like my life was over in a lot of ways. Come to find out that homesteading, in my opinion, is way better from this side. I'm loving how much time I have, how small the workload is, the fact that now I can go and kind of play with my fruit trees rather than just have them be like big chores when I'm trying to get the garden rose dug. And I could go on and on and on, but the lack of stuff to put up and preserve, and the ease of, you know, the lack of physical labor, and the narrowing of my focus to be able to just kind of focus on my animal husbandry and not be so scattered with a billion different projects and subsystems. It's just been incredible. And now I look back and I'm so thankful as a homesteader for this, because now it's entirely possible for me to provide all my own food, sell, you know, sustain myself plus extra to sell, without an overbearing workload. As a matter of fact, I have almost all of my time available for other pursuits. I do very little with my animals. Where I live, I don't really have to hay, so all I have to do is make sure the fences are good. I don't need to water them or hay them. So I just need to make sure the fences are good, and I move them every few weeks, and that's it. So it's been amazing. So those 700 blueberry bushes will be a great asset to you. You'll be able to you know, sell the berries or sell them to pickers, let people come self-pick. You know, I'm sure you've got a million business opportunities there. And that's kind of something I'm excited for in the future too, as I progress here on my self-sufficient and financially self-sufficient at home. I'm an excellent gardener. I spent my life learning how to grow food, and my friends all know. They all, you know, called me a green thumb. They would all come to me for all of my excess produce that I always had. So I, you know, have dreams still of having a farm and growing a bunch of lettuce for people who like to eat it. It almost makes it better that I don't eat it in some ways, because when you're trying to grow your own food, it's really difficult because you can eat a lot of plants. So, you know, I don't know, Josh, it's an interesting, I love having you here though. It's great to have someone else with a homesteading perspective looking into this way of eating. So, Robin says, keto is a good stepping stone on your way to carnivore. It was for me. And Kuhner says, I've been eating more liverwurst lately. Found a delicious one with no weird stuff added. Does have some herbs. That's interesting, Kuhner. I love liverwurst. We have, in our grocery stores here, the ones we have are just garbage. And I still eat them once in a while. Braunschweiger and liverwurst both. You can get like the Oscar Mayer versions. I mean, they are trash. They're probably, I don't even want to think about what's in them. It's probably so bad. And they're okay. I would love to get a good liverwurst. I bet it would be so good. And on a carnivore diet, they seem to add, you know, here I am talking about how liver doesn't seem to give me a boost. Like some people talk about something about liverwurst. I don't know what it is. It might be the dairy, cause they do have quite a bit of dairy in them, I think. And the bacteria. You know, I think that's the yogurt that makes, the thing in the yogurt that makes me feel good is the bacteria that you get. And so I think that liverwurst maybe has some of that. But yeah, I love that. So Esther says, I don't agree with all this new keto is based on keto marketing products, keto eat, keto cookies, keto bread. Yeah, Esther, I agree. I mean, I don't think it's very healthy. I don't think it's really any healthier than anything else. But if it helps some folks at least get introduced to eating low carb, I mean, there's a lot of people out there right now who are drinking, you know, supersized sodas all day, every day. And if they have to eat some fake, I don't even know what, but it helps them get low carb, I mean, I think it's a good move and step in the right direction. So Kuhner says, so awesome to be self-sustaining. Sometimes I feel like I should do more to support regenerative farming and that kind of stuff. Yeah, Kuhner, it's wonderful. It feels really good. And I do, I always encourage people to support their local farmers if they can. Now here in the States, you can just go on Craigslist and you can just look up side of beef. And there's going to be someone, no matter where you are, there's going to be someone within a couple hours raising a cow and selling a half of it off. You don't need to find someone online. Like who has an operation, they're going to charge you a lot. But just a local farmer like me is usually going to charge you like $3 a pound. So I don't know if that's the same in Belgium, Kuhner. It probably isn't. But maybe, you know, if you went, made some contact with some farmers and just asked, there might be some opportunities there. And then at the same time, as much as I'm a big believer in supporting regenerative farming and things like that, I do think that that there are other places to access meat that support sustainable industries, even if they're not just like a single local farmer. Like, you can make your choice at the grocery store and purchase the grass fed or the you know, the better branded, as opposed to the tubes of, you know, factory meat. And I go both ways. I'm not perfect. They all seem to suit me equally well in terms of how I feel. So sometimes my pocketbook dictates and I have to buy the cheaper stuff. But yeah, we could all do our part to help support regenerative farming for sure. So U.S. Wellness has great liverwurst and Braunschweiger. Oh, no dairy. Interesting. Yeah, Robin, you know, you've told me a few times about some good stuff from U.S. Wellness. Every time I go there to make an order, my wallet hurts when I look at the price, and I'm about to order it when I've got a freezer full of, you know, really inexpensive meat. But I'm going to treat myself one of these days because that sounds pretty good. U.S. Wellness liverwurst, great stuff. Okay, I think I'm going to try it. Oh, and no dairy in Kuhner's either. Just beef liver, beef fat, beef meat, salt, and herbs. Oh, it's beef liverwurst. Okay. Yeah, I think most of the stuff here, the Braunschweiger, is usually pork. San Diego has a place called Farm to Fork. Ooh, that sounds really good. And it's not a restaurant, Robin. It's a store. Like, you can go buy individual cuts. So here in the States, I can tell you guys some of this as a producer. The regulatory... it's very difficult to be a small farmer and sell individual cuts. It's really, really, really expensive. So for instance, the way the laws work is I can sell live animals. So when you buy a half a cow from me, we're really making a deal for half of that cow live. And then it's sort of all like, you know, speaking out of both sides of your mouth, because you never talk about selling the animal live, but that's sort of how the law looks at it. And that's why it's allowed. So I can sell you like half a sheep or a whole sheep or a half a cow or a quarter cow or a whole cow, but I can't sell you a cut of ribeye, and I can't sell you a ham hock or something like that. And in order to do that, I have to have the animals slaughtered at a USDA certified facility, which means taking them hours away. There's only 5 of those facilities in my state, and 1 mobile truck, which you can sign up for to the tune of like $2,000 a year or something like that. So they have to be slaughtered at a mobile USDA facility or at a USDA certified. And then they have to go to a USDA certified butcher. Again, there's only a few of those. And packaged with all the proper codes and everything else. At the end of the day, it adds like $5 a pound or more to each cut. I think it's more actually. So it's really difficult for a small farmer to do. But so that was a sort of a long tirade about the idea that that it's really easy to go buy half a cow, but it's always going to be real expensive to go buy a ribeye from that same farmer. So just an encouragement, if you do have a freezer and if you can, a half cow is a great way to go. So Kuhner says, I've been getting to know some farmers here, the Netherlands. Oh, I always get it backwards, Kuhner. I'm sorry. You're in the Netherlands. You know why I get it backwards? Is because I have another fella on my other channel who has it the other way around. I'm just kind of making that realization because I'm going, why do I always think it's Netherlands when it's Belgium, or Belgium when it's Netherlands? I think I've got you two guys and your locations crisscross. Usually pork here too. Only found 1 beef liverwurst. That sounds good. Robin sells it to farm to fork that sells meat directly to customers. They sell by the whole half or quarter, does all their butchering in the halal tradition. That's awesome, Robin. Wow. So if they're selling whole, half or quarter, then they are using that USDA loophole. You know, they're not having to get it butchered at a USDA certified facility, and halal takes it to another level. So I have actually sold a lot of my sheep to the Seattle halal community. I've had them come out and slaughter like dozens at a time. They come out at 6 in the evening and they stay all night, and they slaughter all night in the barn. And I like them. They're really nice folks, and I appreciate the respect that that community gives to the animals and to the slaughter. It's something that appeals to me as a farmer. At least those guys, they were really, I liked what they did. I watched them operate, and it was cool. So Josh says, how many kilograms of meat are you eating in a day? I worked out that I would need about 18 sheep a year to feed me 1 kilogram of meat a day. So Josh, that's a pretty good estimate, I would say. Most of us, I would say, so I'm really small, right? Like I weigh, in kilograms, I think I'm like 65, I'm not sure, 140 pounds. I'm only like 5'5", I'm tiny. And I even eat 2 or 3 pounds of meat a day. So that's like 1 kilogram, I think, is 2.2 pounds. Is that right? Or do I have it backwards? No, that's right. 2.2 pounds, I think, is a kilogram. So 1 kilogram of meat, of meat, and lamb meat is really fatty. So I actually can eat less. When I said 2 or 3 pounds, that's beef. So I think that's a good estimate. You probably would eat roughly about 1 kilogram. I would guess a little more, a little less, depending on the day and what the cut was. But that's probably a pretty good average amount, I would think. Anyone here? Oh, Kuhner would know. Kuhner, you're European. What's your kilograms that you eat a day? Although you have a pretty diverse diet, it seems like, too. Fran says, the problem here in New York State is that USDA butchers do not allow any part of the cow above the shoulders. Wow. Interesting. Meaning like from the neck above, or do you mean like no loin? That would be crazy. No, it must just be from the neck above. So you can't get any of the neck or brain or anything like that, huh? That's probably what that is. Yeah, it's frustrating. So that's why, Fran, I think it's always best to go to a farmer and just go outside of the USDA if you can. If you go to a local farmer and you buy half a cow, if you ask them when slaughter day is and you ask if you can show up. So here's what happens here. When my slaughter guy comes, I pay a guy. I've done it myself and with friends, but it's $100 for the guy to come with his truck and take the sides to the butcher. You know, they come on slaughter day. What they do on slaughter day is they take the sides of beef to the butcher, but the stuff that doesn't go to the butcher is just, you know, take it if you want. So I've given it away these past few years, you know, the liver, the kidneys, the brains, the skin, tail, a lot of times the tenderloins or the hanger steaks, you know, all the little bits and bobs that come off when you're doing a slaughter, those usually don't make it to the butcher. So, if you were to buy a half a cow from a local farmer off Craigslist and you said, hey, can I show up on slaughter day? I'd want to come get the liver. And usually what will happen is you'll be able to get the livers from all the other people's animals or the kidneys or the brains or whatever you're looking for. So I'd highly recommend it. If you have a freezer, if you don't, I'd think it's worth buying one. Get on Craigslist, make a deal for half a cow, go there on slaughter day and load up on organs. Now, I don't eat much organ meat. That's advice for someone who loves organs, but there you go. So Robinson's Farm to Fork started as a gourmet fruit farm, but they started keeping animals to get a break on fire insurance. Meat turned out to be a profitable sideline. I love that story. How cool is that? Huh? So Kuhner, I know you're tall. Yeah. And he says he eats about 1 to 1.5 kilograms a day. And Fran says he can't get the cheeks, for example. Yeah, that's frustrating, Fran. So, and Kuhner says 1.5 kilograms and some eggs, mostly yolks. Interesting. Yeah. Okay, cool. So there's a good ballpark for you, Josh. And Josh was asking me about ducks too. And, geese you were asking about, weren't you, Josh? And, do people eat geese eggs? I guess they do. Goose eggs? Sure. They must, right? Eggs are great. And I think that goose and duck is probably really good too. So Josh, a lot of people, chicken tends to be pretty lean for most of us carnivores. It's a good side dish, but it's hard to eat as a main dish. I think duck would probably be acceptable as a main dish, especially once in a while. I don't think you'd be real happy trying to survive on just duck, but as a couple meals a week, I think it'd be great. And Robin says the halal folks give us all the odd bits, including the head. Yeah, that's pretty common, Robin. When you're close to the people doing the slaughter, you'll have access to all. That's kind of what I'm trying to say, is when you're close to the slaughter, you have access to all that stuff. When you're removed from the slaughter, when you're just at the butcher buying a cut, you know, vacuum sealed of ribeye. You'll never see any of that stuff, and it'll seem like it's expensive and really hard to get. And that's why I'm encouraging people to reach out to a farmer to try and be there, because all that stuff is it's almost free. People don't, there isn't much demand for it until someone packaged it and took it to the store. So Josh says, I'm light too, generally weigh about 63 kilograms. Heaviest I've been is 68 when I increase carbs. Yeah. So I think we're about the same weight, Josh. I think I'm 65. I'm not sure. And you don't want to lose weight. Ideally, you'd like to gain weight. Very active on the farm, so it's trying to eat more lamb, but it's really filling. So, Josh, my story is great for you. So those first Zero Carb Journal episodes, you know, when I started Zero Carb, I weighed 123 pounds or something like that. I could not keep weight on. I was so sick with my IBD. So that's 20 pounds. I was 10 kilograms lighter than I am now. So, and I'm... You know, I'm not super skinny, but I'm not fat. When I was 10 kilograms lighter than this, it was no good. I was really underweight. And so that's my way of saying that you will be able to gain weight on carnivore, but it will take a while, and you will probably lose a little bit of weight the first, you know, few weeks. You might want to try and get fat before you change over. I don't know. But the first couple weeks are hard. It's hard to get enough energy in. Your body just, you can't eat enough fat. It kind of makes you nauseous. Everything's changing. It's transition's a little rough. So don't let that scare you. But this is a little bit of a journey to get over here. Once you're here, it's an awesome place to be. But yeah, I think you'll be able to gain weight. You know, for me, my low weight, my whole life, I've always been tiny, and I've always, you know, I had a belly when I was in my 40s because I was inflamed from poor, you know, from my diet and my constant inflamed state. But for the most part, I've always been underweight. And I just think it's because I just never digested food properly. So finally, now that I'm carnivore, I'm actually like, I gain weight healthy in a healthy way. So I think you'll be okay on it. You might be like me and actually start filling out a little bit. So, Josh says duck and geese have nice dark meat and loads of fat. Yeah, absolutely. I think you'd be just fine on them. And Robin says duck skin makes yummy chicharrones, which are amazing, crispy fried, salty skin bits, I think. For those of you not living near the border there. God, Robin, I'm envious. I wish I could come visit you right now. I'm ready for a San Diego trip. I think you're going back into shutdown. We're still pretty closed down here too, although you can barely tell, but it still doesn't seem like it's the right time to go on a road trip. So, Robin, are the halal butchers USDA inspected, says Fran. And so my experience is no, they're not. And Robin, I don't think, so laws vary state to state, so I can't say this definitively, but I believe, Robin, that they're selling you quarters, halves, and wholes at that farm, that they're not USDA butchered. If they were USDA, then they'd be selling individual cuts for a much higher price. But the fact that they butcher halal, and the fact that they sell quarters, halves, and wholes makes me think that they're not USDA certified butcher. Now, that's nothing to be wary of. The USDA certified butchers, it's just like anything. It's kind of a scam. It just means that there's one of those restaurant dudes who goes through and checks the temperature of the fridge and the stainless bleach wipe down every 15 minutes. And it's just that stuff. And, you know, most butchering, you're just like out in the hay, in the dirt on the farm, you know, hanging the animal up from the tractor. And so I would rather have my animal butchered on a farm than in a laboratory. And that's kind of the difference. So yeah, there's no USDA meat stamp on the packages, then they're not USDA. And I don't think any halal butchers, I actually don't think that halal butchering could be, I could be wrong about this. No, you know what? There must be. I definitely must be wrong about that, 'cause I've seen halal stuff in the store. So, but at any rate, my halal guys, I know what they do. You know, they make the animal face north and they slit its throat and they do their prayers the way they're handling the animals is just, in a USDA certified facility, it's just very different. You know, they have to hang them up and bleed them out, and I don't know. It just seems different. So Little Viking Coach. Oh, Little Viking. You and I were like two peas in a pod here. So Little Viking says, I have a Blackstone griddle. You should get one for your ground beef to make smash burgers. Little Viking coach, I have two Blackstone griddles and I love them and I keep meaning that's my next video is if you're a carnivore, buy a Blackstone griddle. That's exactly. I am so behind you on this. So I bought the little one, the 22-inch square one or whatever. I bought that one to go in my van. Used it last summer. Loved it. Came home and got the big full-size freestanding one. And what I love the most about cooking on a flat top is that I put a bucket behind the big freestanding one and all the grease pours in the bucket. There's no mess. There's nothing to clean. I just scrape it off and I have a literal 5 gallon bucket full of fat that I'm probably going to use for bird feeders, I think. I think I'll mix it with seed and make suet and hang it out for the birds. Lately I've been using it to trap rats. That doesn't sound very attractive, but I just put a rat trap in there near the bucket because the rats are always in there every night. But that Blackstone griddle is hands down the number one way to be a carnivore. Get your cooking outside, get your grease captured, cooks in a flash. I'm 2 minutes per side on my burgers. Gets crazy hot and sears is really great. So get some grill mats, says Little Viking Coach. I'm not sure what I would use those for, Little Viking Coach. What am I missing? I'm missing something. But yeah, France has a total scam, like the laws. Yeah, talking about the USDA laws, absolutely. Esther, are you invited to a barbecue at my place? You guys are all invited to a barbecue at my place. Wouldn't that be fun? That would be so cool. Yeah, Kuhner, I'm not sure if you can get them there. I'm sure there's something similar, but all it is basically just a flat top like you'd see in a restaurant. You know, a big cast iron flat griddle over some propane burners. They come in various sizes. You could go on Amazon US and see the Blackstone one and then probably find a similar one in Europe. Grill mat on the grill to keep it nonstick. I see. That's a pretty good idea. So I don't have much of a problem. I'm just I scrape, so I use a really, really rigid. I'm planning on making a video on this because I do think it's good carnivore. I use a really rigid stainless steel spatula, and I just treat that cast iron griddle like my cast iron pans, like my old Griswold number 8. You know, I scrape it down and season it and just keep it scraped and I haven't had any problems with sticking. If I'm cooking eggs on there, I'll cook a little ribeye right where I'm going to put the eggs right before. But I might have to try some grill mats. Those are interesting. Maybe they'll make it keep it even cleaner. But anyways, I love how clean it is. Amber should have carnivore conference at my house and have all the meetings outside. We got 15 acres. We could do a pretty good spread here. I've often thought about having some kind of festivals here, setting up some porta potties and got a great natural amphitheater. Oh, it'd be fun, but I don't think that's gonna happen this summer. It doesn't look like. Kuhner says, I've been considering one of those double-sided grills to use indoors with the hinge. Yeah, those are pretty interesting too. Those are cool, like the George Foreman little grill and things like that. Those work pretty well, but again, it's just that, you know, cooking inside. You're just gonna end up with a big mess. No matter, we cook a lot of fat, right? So, Little Viking Coach says use a trowel from Home Depot to smash my burgers. So that's great. My spatula is actually like so stiff. It's like a trowel, and that's just exactly why I got it. I use it to scrape the flat top, and then and I do my smash burgers too. We do the same thing, Little Viking Coach. I smash them, smear them out flat. I love them. Yeah, Robin, she canceled for this year. I heard that too, and I was disappointed because I was just starting to think that this was going to be the year to do it for me. But I think it's probably prudent for her to do that, and you know, we'll just get to be that much healthier when we come together in another year. Little Viking Coach says the George Foreman grills don't get hot enough. Oh, interesting. I hadn't experienced that. That's something that I agree with, though, Little Viking Coach, with most cooking things. Like you know, when I cook my meat, I want it to sear like nobody's business. So I insist on having, you know, super, super hot grill. A lot of barbecues weren't getting hot enough for me. And that Blackstone was the first thing I found that was like, oh yeah, that's definitely searing. And I've been really enjoying, as you guys know, I like to thin slice my ribeye and cook it like bacon. And I've been doing that, with brisket as well. And on that Blackstone, man, it fries up so nice. Really a great tool. I keep meaning to make the video and I keep not doing it because everything's covered in grease and I'm embarrassed. I'm being honest here, you guys. I actually cleaned the grill and got it ready for a video and I was like, oh, it's so gross back here. There's just black grease everywhere. So, but it's coming. A big part of it too is it's been raining. So now that hopefully we're heading into some sun, I'm hoping to do some more, get caught up on some of those videos. So I want to do a video on cooking and I want to do my homesteading carnivore video. So I've got some stuff in the works. Now that I'm going to take a little break from journaling, I'm going to keep journaling. I'm definitely going to be consistent with journaling. By the way, you guys, I really appreciated all your comments on whether I should, you know, how often I should journal or not. But I think, like I said earlier, I'll just cut it down to a bigger interval, maybe once a month or twice a month. We'll see how it goes, but definitely interested in keeping you guys appraised of my progress, but I don't feel like I need to do it every week, and hopefully that'll free up some time for some more fun videos. So a little Viking coach says the browning is the flavor. Absolutely. Yeah. The browning is crucial, right? If I have burgers that are cooked, but not brown, I'm like, ew, gross. I don't even want it. Keener says, not sure about the George Foreman one, but there's a Bartscher contact grill that goes up to 572. Yeah. I think there's probably high quality versions out there. Keener, George Foreman is just kind of the crappy one that we all know. It's kind of the ubiquitous one. I think it might've been the first one of those, or at least it was the really popular one. So we all think of those, but there's some nice ones out there. I know that, I can't remember, but anyways, I've seen some high quality, double-sided grills like that. And Little Viking Coach says, I have my store butcher grind chuck steak for burger patties. Love chuck burgers. That's a really good call as well, to have the butcher grind that stuff. Now, from my homesteading background, I bought myself a nice big lem grinder and a nice big lem meat slicer. So I'll often just bring home chuck or, you know, mixes of cuts and grind my own burgers. And I go back and forth between, you know, preferring the chuck ground and preferring it sliced thin and fried. And I know I'm strange with that sliced thin and fried thing, but man, I love it. I don't know what it is about it, but sliced thin and fried brisket, man, I got one that was so fatty this week and fried it, and that brisket fat fried up was just to die for. Kuhner says, yeah, there's stuff built for restaurants. They weigh like 45 pounds. Yeah. So I think that if I was going to do one of those, I would probably try and look for at least one that was a little more commercial. Because I, you know, the other thing is that one of the things that's frustrating for us as carnivores is that we eat so much meat that a lot of those small, like the air fryer, I look at the air fryer and people are like, I love mine. It cooks my steak. And I'm like, I don't see how I could fit enough food in that thing. I'm not picking on the air fryer. I don't have one, but you know, I have a big flat top and my burgers spread out across the whole thing and I eat all of them, you know? So I always wonder about those little single, even my cast iron pan, even my cast iron pan. Excuse me. Even my cast iron pan, you know, I get frustrated because I have to cook like 8 iterations of whatever I'm cooking. Because, yeah, we eat so much. So, Little Viking Coach says, great minds think alike, talking about the cast iron plates and stuff. Talking about the chuck, the grinding the chuck. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Great minds do think alike. Ours do too. So you guys, we've been going for an hour. I'm not really ready to jump off, but I don't have a whole lot more to say unless you guys have more questions or chat stuff. But let me think about what I got going on this week. So in the coming weeks here, I'm going to be Aurelius is coming out with his own brand of liver chips soon. I don't know who that is. Sounds like they will be worth a try. Is that a brand, Carnivore Aurelius? Huh. Worth a try. Thin and crispy. Gave me no time to talk about my week. I think I did, didn't I? I don't remember. Carnivore chips, interesting. I've read about carnivore chips and carnivore bars. To be honest with you, real carnivores don't really snack. So as interesting as those things sound, I kind of don't get the point. But, well, I get the point from their side. Profit. And I'm not picking on them for that. I'm no judgment. I'm just saying. I mean, it might be fun to try, but I don't really see snacking as something I want to do. Whatever. a blogger with a site about carnivore and stoicism. We should be more stoic, not snack so much. I'm a jerk. Maybe he's just using them for to feed himself on long stints of no food. So I don't know. But it does sound interesting. So Noble Wolf, welcome. Noble Wolf asks, is it damaging to freeze meat? I don't believe so. As a matter of fact, I'll freeze meat twice. I don't believe it is at all. No, I don't think so. I have my cows slaughtered and put them in the freezer, and I'll eat frozen beef pretty much exclusively. Even when I go to the store, I usually buy more than I can eat, and I bring it home and freeze quite a bit of it. So my take on freezing beef is that it's great. Some people claim they can notice a difference in taste. I have noticed taste. I've had, a few cuts that were wrecked by, like, freezer burn and stuff like that. But, yeah, Fran says the Inuit have frozen their meat forever. That's exactly it. I think that frozen meat is a part of being human and has been forever. And I can't see how it would be detrimental at all, to be honest. People do talk about, people who think that they're steak connoisseurs will talk about fresh, never frozen beef. But the best steaks I've ever had were actually previously frozen. So I don't put much weight into any of that stuff. So with all of this stuff, Noble Wolf, with all of these questions of, like, what's healthier, is there science on this or that, with all of it, from a carnivore perspective, you kind of get pretty quickly to realize that you're not going to get any real firm, definitive answers. And so really the best thing I think any one of us can do is approach it with an open mind, be curious, ask people their opinions, but go ahead and discover for yourself. Buy two steaks at the store, freeze one of them, cook them both the same night a week later or whatever, and see what, 4 days later, let's say, so that it's a fair comparison, so one of them isn't going bad. See what you think. See if you think one's better or worse for how it tastes or how it makes you feel. And from a health standpoint, I know you're not going to be able to always tell if it's healthier or not, but over the long term, I think you can. If you eat frozen food all the time and it wasn't healthy, you probably would start to notice. So Phil Robin says, doesn't hurt as long as you package it well so it doesn't get freezer burn. And I agree with that. I think frozen meat can be damaged by a freezer, but generally it's not. So, and Esther says, frozen meat can even be better if it's frozen fresh. Sometimes on the supermarket, it's not that fresh. And I agree with that 100%. I mean, 100%. That's why all of the fishing boats have frozen seawater, refrigerated salt water. I installed those systems on them. The old boats used to go out and come back and bring the fish to the cannery. Now they go out and they can freeze them on board, and so they can stay out longer, but the fish is higher quality because they don't have that transit time to the cannery. So yeah, I think frozen, the sooner you freeze it, the better. And Esther says, if you're worried about histamine, as long as the meat is frozen when very fresh, there is no problem. So it sounds like the general consensus is that freezing is fine. I know I feel that way. And again, I just encourage you to, some people are going to notice the taste and they're going to be like, oh, I don't like the taste of frozen meat. And that's okay. If you really notice the taste and you don't like it as much, I won't question that. But I don't think there's any health issues there. So let's see. Kuhner says, I didn't get to talk about my week, but I think I did, Kuhner. I've been here in the rain, just kind of staying positive, staying in the moment. I had a pretty good week working out. I did add a pull up to my sets. I know we were talking about progression before. I just hit a break in my 90 day goals structure round. So I wrapped up 90 days of goals. And so this week coming up is I think some people are just picky, says Robin. I 100% agree, Robin. So this week coming up for me is a break week in my 12-week cycles of these 90-day goal rounds. So this week coming up, typically I'd take a break from my workouts, And I just kind of reevaluate my goals and write up a new goal list for the next 90 days. So this week coming up, I'm going to do that. I am probably going to work out because I've been pretty sedentary. I really haven't been pushing myself hard. And I'm going to write up my next goal for the next 90 days. So that's kind of what's coming up for me this week is a little bit of reflection, focusing on what's next for me and where I want to be 90 days from now. So I'm going to try and stay the course with my food. I'm going to stick to for the most part, ground beef and water. I've got some eggs, some smoked salmon, and some brisket that I'll be working my way through. So I'll have those as my sort of additional sides. Haven't had a sick night for a while, you guys. Been a few weeks. And that's about it. Don't have any work, so I don't have anywhere to go. I'm trying to stay home, trying not to go drive around in my van. So I think that my week is going to be just one of staying in the moment, staying positive, figuring out where I want to be in 90 days and giving myself some goals and some stuff to shoot for. And then I'm going to settle in and see if I can get a routine to try and achieve those. So Robin says, I love frozen pemmican, carnivore popsicles. And Little Viking says, eat it frozen meat popsicles. Interesting. Frozen pemmican, that sounds really interesting. I know you've probably, that's probably a U.S. wellness thing too. I'm going to have to put it in order one of these days. Robin, I've said that for years now to you, and I still haven't done it. So, never had pemmican, says Kuhner, and want to learn to make it for canoe camping trips. Yeah, it'd be really good for that kind of stuff. So, yeah, Robin, my digestion is in fairly good nick right now, about as good as it gets. It's funny, after all these years, my digestion is I feel good, you know, and it doesn't, it's not really giving me too many surprises these days. But it isn't normal. So, after all these years, I definitely have some sort of condition. So anyways, but it's the best it's ever been, and I can't tell you how much better life is as a carnivore. So well, all right, you guys, I think I'm gonna head towards wrapping it up. What do you think? Wind her down. So we'll do another one, maybe 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, maybe a month, but it won't be any longer than that. And I promise you, if it's a month, that I will come back and do some other stuff in between. So Josh, really glad to have you here, man. Feel free to email me if you got any questions at all, or hit up. Yeah, love to help you on your journey. And thank you very much for being here. And all the rest of you guys, thank you so much, you guys, for all your support and comments all through this. It's just, you guys have meant so much to me. So wonderful to have you here on a Sunday, and I really appreciate these chats, man. It's just awesome to bounce this stuff off you. It makes me feel way less alone on this journey. As you guys know, that's probably the hardest thing about this. So knowing you guys are out there means a lot to me. So yeah, Kuhner, Robin, really glad you made it this time. Little Viking Coach, Esther, Wolf. I'm going to forget somebody. I'm going up in the chat and I know that I'm Fran. All of you guys, thank you so much for listening and watching, and have a great Sunday. Yeah, Robin, you too. Happy Sunday. And Esther, I will see you in a month at the most. I might come back in 2 weeks. I'll try and give you a warning beforehand, but no more than a month, I promise. At the very most, it'll be early July, but I'll definitely be back sometime with another video in between. So I'll keep you posted. All right, you guys, have a great week, and I guess I got to go over here and do my video thing here, but I will catch you guys next time. Thanks a lot for watching and listening, you guys. See ya.